This is Sharon. I'm here with Jason and Rob. Guys, if you had to describe this podcast in five words or less, what would you say?
I'm going to go with Wile E. Coyote guzzling gasoline.
I'm thinking climate change diarrhea hurricane.
Are you serious? Maybe I should do this thing on my own.
Fine. It's a show about how to stay sane in a world where there's too many people consuming too much stuff and the planet can't take it anymore.
You had me at diarrhea.
Caution, if you're allergic to four-letter words, you might want to try a different podcast.
Hey, it's Asher. We really want to hear from folks. We want to get some feedback on the podcast, see what we can do to improve, see if folks have any ideas. So we would really appreciate it if you took a minute to fill out a survey that we created. You can go to postcarbon.org/CT survey. That's CT survey. And just let us know what you think. Thanks.
Okay, I'm not a doctor. Well, I kind of am. But anyway, I'm not that kind of doctor.
You're a PhD doctor.
Yeah, piled higher.
You like
deeper.
To put doctor in front of your name.
Damn it,
you?
Jim, I'm a doctor.
You are one of those doctors, aren't you?
Anyway.
What is this show about here? What are you talking about?
I want to quiz you guys on best practices to deal with a few medical conditions.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I am good in an emergency.
Okay.
I think you do what you do with horses.
What's that? Shoot them?
Shoot them.
Okay. Yeah.
Ride off on them into the sunset.
Well, this might be like, you know, yours and you and yours in trouble here. Are you ready for some? Okay.
What scenario me?
Okay. A friend of yours has just had an unfortunate chainsaw accident and cut a femoral artery. Okay.
Oh, that's the leg artery.
Yeah,
right?
It's a big one. Okay. So do you A, make a tourniquet with your t-shirt you just ripped off, or do you apply?
Ooh, that's like Hulk Hogan before a match.
It just strips. Okay. Yeah, okay. Or B, apply the Band-Aid that you just found in your first aid kit.
Okay. First of all, it's C. You got to sew that thing up with a stick and some spider web that you found on
this
the trail.
Is femoral. You got 2 minutes before they bleed out. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going for the tourniquet.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good.
I'm taking this seriously.
Okay. I'm running inside, getting a sewing machine, and then I'm going to go to town on it.
Okay. You just failed. Okay.
Your friend is dead.
A share one. So, Rob zero.
Wait. So I've never taken anything seriously. This is going to be okay. I'm on.
This
okay,
is emergency.
This is a quiz, man. Yeah. You got to step up your
okay,
game.
Okay. Give me
now,
another one.
I'm going to try to make this personal. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You are trying to pass a kidney stone.
Ouch.
And it hurts like nothing you can imagine because you are a man and you have never given birth. Okay? Do you reach for A, 2 aspirin, or B, a dose of Vicodin?
Oh,
I think I just...
Depends where... let's say I'm like... I just was at Yosemite and I climbed to the top of El Cap. I just jump off.
Yeah. Jump off. Right. Right. Now, you're lying in bed. You're an ache.
You know, I've never taken Vicodin, but my guess is I'd probably be reaching for that puppy.
Yeah, it's an opioid. Yeah. It really cuts out the pain.
That's 2-0 now, isn't
okay,
it?
Yeah, you're in trouble. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Well, you're dead, so you're out of the quiz anyway.
Okay.
I just died of kidney stone?
No, you threw yourself off the top of your
That's
assembly.
Right.
Have to.
All right, last question. Another one. This is kind of personal, okay? One of your molars is throbbing, right? And an x-ray shows a deep infection in the root. Your dentist is likely to recommend A, extraction with a Novocaine injection, or B, 3 shots of whiskey, a tobacco poultice, and sleep it off.
I think I'm going to win this one. What do you say, Asher? B, take B.
B sounds nicer.
I know.
Can we combine them? Can we get the Novocaine extraction and the 3 shots
okay.
of whiskey?
Hey,
and
good
the
answer.
And
you,
the
win.
Vicodin.
You win. You win. Right. All of that and the Vicodin. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, okay, what's the point here?
Well, okay.
The point is that we're idiots, first of all, but everyone listening already knew that.
We didn't need to do this.
Well, you remember when I was talking about being on that airplane in episode one and the wings on fire?
Yeah.
I mean, I was lying.
That was not a true story.
It was not a true story. But you
just
know how...
like you're not a real doctor.
Right, but I felt like... You know, sorry, I don't need booze or my meal, and let's stop the movie. Let's take care of the wing. This is what I think we're doing as a society, right? I mean, my point is that our responses are so damn weak compared to what's needed, and you feel like it's like malpractice, right?
So, yeah. So stepping back, the crises of climate change, the energy transition we need to make, biodiversity loss, all the things we've been talking about,
right?
You're saying our response is to take some whiskey and some...
Band-Aid.
And some Band-Aids. Yeah. And instead of the tourniquet or the, hey, let's stop what we're doing and do something different. Really different.
Really different. Right.
I think you're totally right. I mean, I could just tell you from my personal experience, I've been involved here in Corvallis, the community that we live in, trying to help implement this climate action plan that the city had adopted a couple of years ago. So they invited me to be on this advisory board, and I looked at the plan, and the plan is actually probably not aggressive enough. You know, there's a goal of 75% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions over 1990 levels by 2050. And if you just step back and you think about that, or you think about, you know, what we're hearing now from the climate science community telling us that we need to cut emissions 45% in the next 11 years,
right?
What we're actually doing here in this community is, it doesn't even register on the Richter scale, you know, and this is a community of people that, I mean, I chose to live in this community in part because there is, I would say, more awareness and concern about climate change and other issues than a lot of places. There's a very thriving community of sustainability.
People should know Corvallis is consistently ranked as, you know, one of the greenest towns in America.
Yeah, it's a bikeable city, you know, walkable city. It's
a university town. We've got like the state climate scientist is based at the university here.
I don't know if it's still true, but I know when I moved here, we had the highest percentage of PhDs in the general population.
Per capita or whatever.
Yeah. Right? We need to stop talking up this town because our listeners, some of them might actually want to move here now.
Well, but keep going because what you're saying is...
My point is, we still suck.
My point is that high awareness levels in this community, right? But the action is just not there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's incredibly frustrating for me because it's not like the people that we're engaging with are ignorant of the challenge. They just, we're like locked in together in this business as usual mindset where there's constant sense of like, well, we can't do this thing or we can't do that thing because we have these other practical considerations.
Right, it's too radical or whatever. I had this, and also people seem to compartmentalize. So like I was in Willits a number of years ago. I lived there.
California,
10 years ago. Plus.
Way down south from here.
Right, exactly. Beautiful area, Mendocino County, about 3 hours north of San Francisco. It's a small town, about 5,000 people. And so I kind of knew everyone on the city council. And I'd started a nonprofit and was starting a school farm. And I was pretty active. And I was getting some award in front of the city council. And I came up and I received the award and then I said, thank you.
Wait, what was the name of the award? You
I have no idea, but it was like...
Was it for putting on a tourniquet?
The Do-Gooder of the Year award.
I remember in The Simpsons, I think Homer won the award of for outstanding achievement in the field of excellence. So maybe that was your award.
Oh, yeah. Something great. I'm like, oh, thank you so much. And da-da-da. And you know, this is a small city council chamber room. You know, you're looking right at people And so I go sit back down, and then like the next item on the agenda, they say they have this kind of a rah rah, yeah, we want that freeway.
Okay, so your award though was for being an activist for environmental conservation, for
reducing
community
fossil
resilience,
fuel consumption, you know, climate change.
Okay.
Like all, and then it's like, okay, we're done with that.
Now
we're
going to
pave. Now we're going to go expand a freeway.
Right? We need at least six more lanes on this puppy.
Did they even take a deep breath between those two things?
I don't remember.
Go get a shot of whiskey.
But you know, you're allowed to do community comments and all this. So I walk right back up there and I just start like.
Did you take the award and like wipe your ass with it and give it back?
Throw
at
it at him.
You might want to work on how articulate your response is. Yeah, that's a hard one to understand.
It was like a Peanuts cartoon.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You're like the grown up.
Yeah, right. I was peeved. I felt like it was tokenism. Like, you know, don't do this. Or what is wrong? Like, what's the psychology here, right?
Did you actually, like, I picture you taking your award and just spiking it on the ground into 1,000 pieces and then storming off. Is it like some kind of political theater or something?
It wasn't that bad. It was pretty theatrical, though. I was fuming.
I got to give you credit for doing that, however effective it was. I'm sure the freeway was not...
Oh, it's in now. It's there.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
oh,
they built it.
Darn, man. Okay, so I'm not going to give you that much credit. No, I'm seriously would give you some credit for actually standing up and saying something. You know, in my experience is that, to be perfectly honest, I'm still trying to navigate building relationships with folks. I don't want to just stand up and kind of yell at the city council who has appointed me to be on this advisory board,
right.
Yell at the mayor, get pissed off at city staff who I feel like are not doing enough.
Well, the psychology is fascinating because there's politeness, right? Like you could have, Jason, just been polite and accepted your award and gone, you know, an eye roll, right. You know, at this highway. But instead, you said, okay, I'm gonna speak in public, but it's really hard to do. That is a difficult place to be. And I empathize with you, Asher. These are thoughtful people that you work with.
These are my friends. I like these people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also understand the reality of what they're dealing with as well. The city's got a budget that it has to try to figure out how to meet. So we've been trying to push to get some staffing at the city level to help implement this climate action plan. You know, what we're hearing is issues around being able to afford bringing on a new staff person. And you know, and there are these other concerns that sort of trump. Right now, the city's trying to figure out how to make sure that the library and the pool stay funded. Right. You know? Right. And we've got issues with housing and homelessness. And these are real concerns.
We have talked about that, how you end up seeing all of society through the lens of money and what can we pay for. And these things that we talk about, they're not money makers, right? The idea of not putting in the highway or the idea of changing your infrastructure, they're not money making ideas. And so it's really hard for people to get out of that mindset, I think.
Yeah. And so what do you do when you, like, if I'm honest with myself about social status, right? We talk sometimes about social status in terms of like people's concern about what others think of them and how social status is actually something that we evolved to have in order to succeed as a species. You know, social status was really important in terms of our living in community together. So it's kind of ingrained deeply in us. So it makes kind of sense that I might be concerned about my social status. I also want to be effective, right? So if I just stand up there and yell at them, no offense, Jason, right? They might just write me off.
Right.
And at the same time, I also understand where they're coming from. But what do you do with that understanding when the planet's on fire, whatever the artery's been cut, you know, whatever metaphor you want to use?
Well, that idea that hanging on to your social status, or how do you do that while still trying to, I guess, protest what's happening in society. I struggle with that all the time. There's so many pressures that you have to face as you try to, say, conserve or use less or convince others to do that. An example that I have is a few years ago, my family were taking care of my uncle as he was dying. He had cancer and he lived far away. And my mom and my sister and I, we were all trading off in the last few months of his life, trading off taking care of him and going to his house. And I'm really glad I got to do that. And it felt a wonderful way for him to go. I think he was ready and got to spend time with family. So that was great. And we were all really exhausted afterwards. Yeah. You know, that's a hard thing to do. So he actually had some money that when he died, he turned over. And my mom, sort of as a, hey, we just went through this, let's do something together, she said she wanted to take us all on a cruise.
Right.
And, you know, for people, yeah, I know. I was like, a cruise? Oh, I can't think of a more wasteful, fuel-burning scenario. But I ended up deciding, I could decide. I'll either make the stink and say, you know, give her a lecture about how bad a cruise is, or I can just go along with it and try not to hate myself for doing so. But I ended up going on the cruise, and I swear I feel so conflicted sometimes. Like, I'm such a hypocrite. You know, here I am saying we need to make this big change that doesn't really involve hanging out on cruise ships. And I could go into that. What a shit show that scene was. But
yeah. Oh, my gosh. It totally reminds me of what happened to me and my family. So when I was in this Willits phase of our life, we decided as a family that we were not going to fly anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then what happens, of course, is that you get invitations. So friends say, "Hey, fly to New Orleans and let's go on a cruise." or "Hey,
what's with the goddamn cruises?"
"Hey, why don't you join us in Europe or whatever?" I mean, and we kept having to tell people, "No, I'm sorry, we don't fly anymore." And then it brings up, "Well, what? Well, why?" And then you say, well, you know, there's this thing called climate change, or
I hope that's the way you said it. There's this thing you idiot may have heard of called.
Right, so, I mean, are you passive aggressive in how you explain this? My wife did more of the talking. She's better.
Thank goodness. Yeah.
But it was really difficult. And so there's a lot of fallout of stepping out of what's normal and making a statement and changing what you do. Now, we didn't suffer too much because whenever I wanted to go somewhere, I was in Mendocino County and we would just like, okay, go to the coast. Or, I mean, it's a beautiful, gorgeous place. So in some ways, what it forced us to do was really explore what was near us. And that was a fantastic adventure. But it kind of put a barrier between us and other people.
So were they mad at you? What was the general response when you tell people that?
Well, just kind of a little like, what's, why? I don't get it. You know, I think there's an assumption that if you have money in some ways, and then you've earned it, you deserve it, and you work hard, and so why not have fun with it? And what's wrong with that? And when you say something like, well, actually, we probably shouldn't spend our money burning this kerosene. What are you doing? Are you telling them that they're wrong, you know, or they're not doing, they're hypocrites, or they're not virtuous enough?
Yeah, they're not as virtuous as you are.
All right. So it puts you in this really weird dynamic. And yet in some ways, what I think is good is it forces conversation that maybe wouldn't have happened if you hadn't done something kind of dramatic or out of kilter compared to the norms.
Right.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's hard because we're talking about social status. To make a decision like that and to do it when you're communicating to others sort of the rationale for it, how do you do that without them feeling judged by you? How do you do that without them feeling, in this case, sort of unloved? Like, you don't love us enough to get on a plane and come see your, you know, have your kids see their grandparents or whatever the hell it is. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And that's really tough. And I think the other thing that's hard is you do these things and you make some of these sacrifices and then you look around you. Right. It's not like that plane that you would have taken didn't take off.
That's a classic argument that they would give us. Yeah, right?
Right. But it is true that...
Oh, it's so easy to rationalize this behavior. Right. That's part of the problem, right?
But if 5,000 of us stop flying, then maybe flights get cut. You know, so you can say...
Sure. It's just, you know, it's tough. And it makes me think a little bit about, like, well, we're all individuals, right? And I think we all have our particular way of thinking about things. And we have our childhoods raised in a certain way with certain either value sets or ways of approaching things. But I tend to think of it like sort of this spectrum, you know, of ways that people can tend to respond. And obviously everyone's an individual, but like, let's say you get woke, right?
You understand the crises that we're facing. Yeah.
You're aware and you're concerned, right? So there's sort of like this spectrum. And maybe I would say, like, on the one hand, or on the one end, you could sort of see the people that maybe I would call them like the town crier. You know, they get concerned about these things. They're sort of freaked out.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they know how to do is to like try to yell at everybody else to wake up. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And the more scared they are, they're worried, maybe the more vocal they tend to be, but there's a question about how effective that is. So I think
I immediately in my mind go share to where somebody's coming up to me. Usually this happens after a talk and I'm kind of like, oh boy, here it comes. And then they go off on their rant about whatever it is.
And look, in our work, you know, all the types of things that we've done, our work at Post Carbon Institute, we encounter folks like this all the time, understandably. At resilience.org, which is a website that we operate, you know, we publish, you know, half dozen articles a day there. And there are folks that come onto that site. You know, we have like a million people that visit that website every year, but there are some folks that come there regularly every day and they're commenting. And you could just tell that they are obsessive. Yeah. You know, they're spending their time reading articles about the how yeah. bad things are, and they'll cry out in the comments yeah. or whatever.
And I mean, it's easy to poke fun, but I also have empathy
yeah,
for these
too.
Folks because totally. You know they're just trying to find a way to right. process this. This very difficult knowledge.
But I guess I put them in this in a certain territory where they're actually, in some cases, and this is not true for all of them, but in some cases, that is their action is
right.
yeah. is crying out right. and trying to like shake other people. And how effective that is a good question. But mm-hmm. they're not necessarily doing other things.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, let's go up the next level of people who are doing things, and that's the tinkerer, right? And okay. the tinkerer. Well, I've got a story to explain this one. So I was actually invited to be the keynote speaker after I wrote my book at this pretty decent sized conference. And, you know, conferences are really all about networking and stuff
and
like that.
And your book is called Enough is Enough, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah. yeah. We want to buy and sell as many of those
exactly.
as possible. Yeah. So anyway, I met a woman who was, I guess her title was something like the chief sustainability officer for an airline.
Oh, good luck.
Right, which is a little...
Bless her soul.
Her job was to shut down the airline.
She presents her strategic plan yeah. for the CEO of the company. Yeah. All it says is...
Stop.
Go out of business.
Yeah, stop paving the runways. Yeah.
So, but she was telling me about, she had just... had a major achievement of okay. replacing the styrofoam coffee cups that they were using on the plane with, I don't know, some kind of biodegradable material, right? Which, okay, that is an improvement. And, you know,
right.
I didn't know what to say to her. You know, I was just kind of, okay, that's
so
great, you know.
You're burning jet fuel. You know, 35,000 feet in the air, but at least her cup
and
is compostable.
She knew it, too. I mean, this is a woman who, you know, she had studied environmental science, and she even, as she was telling me this, was saying, and I know that's a little thing, but it is something,
right.
you know? And so I think that's the idea, is that you can tinker with the system as is. You can be working for a major corporation. You can be, and your response to this knowledge is, well, let me just see what things I can change around the edges.
Right, right.
And I don't know. I think I started my career trying to sort of be in that part of it and quickly couldn't stay there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a way of trying to feel like you're doing something without completely turning your own life upside down or risking your social status.
Yeah, yeah, right? That's the yeah. What the social status piece is huge. I mean, yeah. she has way more status than I've got. I mean, she probably makes, you know, a six-figure salary.
But it's her social yeah. status within the institution, the structure that she's
yeah.
in. Right?
But even within mainstream society, right? Her job is, well, we're idiots working for a nonprofit, right?
She's working for an airline.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
Right.
And when you say, like, you're at a cocktail party and you say, what do you do? You're like, oh, I'm a chief sustainability officer. And then you say, what
for
do I do?
A major corporation, yeah.
I say funny fart jokes on a podcast, you know? or maybe they're not funny.
No. Okay, so moving on. There's another kind of category of responses. Maybe I would call them the feralists, right? Like a feral cat.
Like Will Ferrell?
No, like a feral cat, right?
Okay.
Like basically people who are so concerned about these issues, they feel like tinkering is not enough, obviously, right? So they sort of drop out. They go back to the land.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They,
God, I want to do that.
I know.
they say society's going to collapse on itself. You know, they want to have nothing to do with it. They,
yes.
You know, they,
like a neutron star, it's going to collapse, form a black hole.
So they step out, you know, and there's different ways of doing that. You could do that sort of a prepper back to the lander with your compound. And I know actually somebody sort of did that. She,
you know, a doomsday prepper?
Yeah, I mean, that's my bug out plan is to go visit them. But she actually, you know, she had a young son and was really worried and didn't want to have anything to do with kind of the status quo. And she sort of like, yeah, she dropped out. She was homeschooling him. He was doing survivalist classes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's the kid I'm going to contact, you know,
right,
when
right.
everything breaks down, you know, so that he can show me how to bow hunt.
Right.
Know?
Yeah. But he can make a tent out of a buffalo hide.
That's right.
Can, yeah.
And, you know, then there are folks who do that in community together. You know, they're the
eco-village in the rural hinterlands kind of thing.
Eco-village, some kind of, you know.
Although I would say I'm living in an eco-village, as you two
know. But you're
in
town.
But it's such a, regular existence. Right. I mean, I would say that the community is far better prepared than your typical neighborhood for crises and for disruptions. And we can rely on each other. But yeah, there's way more extreme examples of eco-villages.
I'm talking about people who basically drop out of modern
society. Oh, there's some great reality TV shows like this. Like, you know, like this, I don't know what the name, but in Alaska, you can find these families, you know, where they're taking birch bark and that's their roof and they're smoking bear meat and salmon and picking berries. And that's like their life. Like they're literally families living completely off grid in the wilderness.
Yeah,
right?
You guys ever see that movie from 2016, Captain Fantastic?
I want to now.
No.
Tell me.
No.
It stars the guy that was in the Lord of the Rings, Aragorn, what's his name? Viggo Mortensen.
Okay.
And he's the patriarch of this large family of feralist is a good. Like he's got these feral children and he's raising them in the woods. So I think that it opens with like one of these kids jumping out of a tree and stabbing a deer in the face and drinking the blood or something.
It's warm. It's nice and warm.
But he's basically teaching them how to live in connection with nature and, you know, some of the things that we would say are good ideas. I don't know about the stabbing part, but his wife has cancer and has been sent back to a hospital. And anyway, the movie is really about the values of this off-grid existence versus his father-in-law, who's got the very much on-grid corporate lawyer type existence. Mm. And yeah, I mean, this stuff, I don't know. It's a good exploration of your dropping out and how you do that and the conflicts that arise.
Yeah. Well, this discussion reminds me of kind of the Ken Ward story, which is what we brought up in our first episode. And, you know, that's sort of the activist mindset where you are going to try to initiate change in the society that you're remaining part of. So you're not, you know, you're going to critique it, but you're also going to be present and have enough relationships within that society that you're hoping to change hearts and minds and then eventually behaviors in that society you're in. Yeah. And it takes a huge range, of course, of strategies and tactics
to
do that.
There's all different ways to be an activist. Yeah. I mean, what's interesting about Ken's story is that he actually, and we talked about this, he struggled with feeling like everyone else is crazy or I'm crazy, right? And then was told he was crazy. And then he eventually realized, no, I'm not the crazy one. You know, the world I live in is crazy. But he was engaging in it, right? He didn't decide to kind of drop out, or he stayed in that place where he remained focused on the true nature of the crisis, the climate crisis in this case, but was not like, fuck society, I'm out of here.
Right.
He was trying to actually change things.
Yeah, and in case you missed it, we talk about Ken Ward and the valve turners. These are the people that turned off the pipelines that were bringing tar sands oil from Canada down to the U.S., we talked about that in episode one, orangutans, Santa suits, and airplanes on fire. I also wanted to say on the activist, we're talking about the spectrum of different responses. Obviously, within activism, there's a huge spectrum. And then I think there's a almost dropping off the spectrum entirely. You could think of them as the vigilantes. And the prime example has got to be Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. Mm-hmm. You know, here was a guy that, I mean, I hate to say it, he had some similar things to point out about society that we have, but his response was just cruel, violent, completely antisocial, nothing pro-social about it. That is a response.
But did I ever tell you that my dad, you know, Kaczynski's main critique was on technology, right? And he actually was targeting people within who were creating technology, you know, supporting the diffusion of technology in society. My dad got a call one day from the FBI because when they finally found Ted Kaczynski, right, there was like a search for this guy for a long time.
Right.
When they finally found him and they found his cabin in the woods, he had written on the walls of his cabin the names of a bunch of people. My dad's name was on there.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think my dad was like high on the target list necessarily, but kind of freaky to get a call like
that. That's really freaky. I mean, there's no way we'd be sitting here talking with you if Kaczynski had been successful in targeting him. I think your life would have totally gone a different route.
For sure, yeah. So here we are, you know, sort of looking at this spectrum of kind of responses and the challenge of trying to figure out how to respond. And I guess for me, like, I don't want to tell people how to respond because I think everyone's circumstances are different. They're wired differently. People's skill sets are different. Their circumstances are different. I mean, your socioeconomic circumstances make a big difference in terms of what you're, you know, positioned to be able to do. But I would say just don't drop out, you know, like, it's really hard to stay in this place. I mean, we're talking about our own struggles, you know, whether it's with family or in our communities, in our own personal lives, dealing with our own hypocrisies, just that challenge of trying to be present with these concerns and feeling like we're doing something, but not completely dropping out, you know, disengaging.
I think you're right. I think we, all three of us on some level, have all embraced the sort of activist part of that spectrum. And like I said, that has a big range in and of itself, different ways to be an activist. But I think what we're facing in our communities, in our society, the global environment, we're all activists now, or we've got to be.
And, you know, what's interesting is I think about the frustrations we've all felt and the frustrations of people like Ken Ward. And I think about it in terms of this concept of the Overton window. Have you guys heard of that a little bit?
No.
Well, it's a sort of this political science idea that there's what politicians are willing to do only comes about through what conversations are there and their sense of, does society accept that this is an idea that's appropriate, that's okay? So
this, let me see if I got it. This window is like a political feasibility test.
Right.
Like, can a mainstream politician talk about the limits to growth, for example, or changing the car culture, the car infrastructure?
Right. They can't talk about it until they know that, most of society is talking, like, they're the last people to actually talk about it and then say, here's the policy that helps us align with what we're talking about.
So why is this thing called the Overton window? That sounds like some sort of CIA operation or something.
It's like a political scientist named Overton came up with this idea.
Okay.
And so what I think what's happening is that what we have to do is try to open up that window, like widen it and sort of say things that are unpopular, so that they can become more part of the conversation, so that finally say, wait a second, actually a lot more people are talking about this. So our broadening the Overton window, opening the Overton window is key to all the conversations that we've all been having and all these activists have been having over decades, actually.
Well,
and you're waiting for that window to open enough so then the political and business leaders can actually say it as well and follow, really.
Well, I like that you introduced me to that term because it actually ties very closely to what we're trying to do at Post Carbon Institute, which is to have these conversations, these truthful, almost brutally honest conversations and articles and even this podcast about what's happening in society. And to be able to open, I think, that or to widen what you can see out that Overton window. And in fact, it reminds me of the Milton Friedman quote. You know, that guy is he's kind of the arch enemy of ours in terms of economic stance.
Neoliberal economics. Yeah.
But we all agree that he said something really important, which was things change only when you've got a crisis, or at least perception of a crisis. And the changes that are made depend on the ideas that are lying around.
Yeah.
And that's our job, is to put those ideas out there and to keep them alive. And I think he said it until
what's politically implausible now becomes politically inevitable.
Right.
Exactly. That's what we need to do. So what's happening now is interesting. Like, there's the Extinction Rebellion, for example. There's that the Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg, right?
Yeah, she is amazing.
Right, so she's saying stuff that, of course, is blunt and direct.
Look, why don't imagine. Let's hear some of it, actually. Here, let's give a listen.
Okay.
My name is Greta Thunberg. I am 15 years old, and I'm from Sweden. I speak on behalf of Climate Justice Now. Many people say that Sweden is just a small country, and it doesn't matter what we do. But I've learned that you are never too small to make a difference. And if a few children can get headlines all over the world just by not going to school, then imagine what we could all do together if we really wanted to. But to do that, we have to speak clearly, no matter how uncomfortable that may be. You only speak of green, eternal economic growth because you are too scared of being unpopular. You only talk about moving forward with the same bad ideas that got us into this mess, even when the only sensible thing to do is pull the emergency brake. You are not mature enough to tell it like it is. Even that burden you leave to us children. But I don't care about being popular. I care about climate justice and a living planet. Our civilization is being sacrificed for the opportunity of a very small number of people to continue making enormous amounts of money.
Holy crap, right?
Yeah, so she's saying, hey, why don't you go fuck yourselves?
Right, the mouth of babes, right? It's like the emperor has no clothes. But I don't think she came from nowhere. Like, she has sort of just emerged at this time, but she's saying stuff that a lot of people have been saying for decades, honestly.
Well, yes and no. I mean, she's saying this very bluntly to right. those who do have power.
Somehow
I mean,
she that, got an audience, right?
Yeah, and I the thing that strikes me most about what she's doing is the level of courage that it takes to, one, be that confrontational, mm-hmm. and two, to set aside, as we've talked about, social status, reputation. I mean, for her, this is great
she's
social status.
That, I don't care about being popular.
Right, right.
Meanwhile, she's incredibly popular.
Right. Right. It's
like, well, yeah, she's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, right?
Yeah. I mean,
which I should say is a little more prestigious than the Nobel Prize in economics.
I think there's a lot here. I mean, Greta is someone who says she doesn't care about popularity. I think, again, it's her circumstances and who she is as a person that put her in this moment, right? Yeah. I think that she says she doesn't care about popularity. I kind of believe her. I certainly don't think that was her initial motivation, but she's become sort of a star. And I think she's become a star because she has courage, because she speaks so clearly, because she's expressing what I think a lot of people are feeling and haven't had the courage or the ability to communicate.
Yeah.
And as you were saying, Jason, she's not doing it in a vacuum. It's not like a big bang that suddenly emerged out of nowhere. She's a product of something. And in her own journey that she's talked about was when she became awakened to the reality of climate change. She's a person who happens to like to kind of research and understand things right. and has a very analytical mind. She was fortunate enough to find a great body mm-hmm. of literature and evidence, including people making connections like we've made on the podcast between climate change and economic growth.
Look at what she's doing. She is confronting very directly people and calling them out, calling them cowards to their faces.
Ineffective.
And one thing that she's really got in her favor is she's a teenager. She's young. It's not like a colleague of theirs going in, they wouldn't even invite that person, right, to give them the microphone. And so I think, it's just the right person at the right time. But the thing that really strikes me is that, and this is something I think we all need, is to decide what, you know, it's, you have to have that courage and decide how much are we going to push ourselves with that courage and how willing are we to confront others. But as I think you all have pointed out, we've got to have some savvy about that. We've got to do it in a way that doesn't just shut people down.
And I think also to realize that she's saying this stuff and she's getting heard, but this is probably not the first time these people have actually heard these critiques, all right? they've probably been hearing critiques like hers for many years. And it's like marketing, right? You've got to get this message out over and over again. And it might be the 10th time someone hears it. And so there's some kind of tipping point happening perhaps in the society right now. I hope so, where so many people are now like, oh my gosh, this is an existential crisis that we may be switching now and flipping in terms of what's permissible to talk about. And so if you've been frustrated in the past, I think stay with it. Yeah. Get back in there, because this could be the time when the window has shifted to a point where now you can be listened to and appreciated.
And getting back to what we're saying about don't drop out, be engaged, I think not all of us could be a Greta. You look at the conversation around the Green New Deal, which is also something that's gotten a lot of buzz recently. People are responding to that because of a messenger, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right, and her popularity talking about this idea. And for them, it's like, oh my God, this is an amazing new idea, without realizing that people have been talking about this idea in various forms for over a decade, yeah, you know, which is, I'm not saying that out of any frustration at all. I think it's great. It's just, it reminds you that you may not be recognized. You may not be that voice that a lot of people are tuning into, but us engaging, you know, having the courage to engage with people in our community, that it could be your physical community, it could be your social community, your family, whatever it is, makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know? And whatever you need to do to allow yourself to stay in the game, right? By staying in the game, I mean staying really present,
yeah,
with the severity and the urgency of the crises that we face, and still staying engaged within society and the world around you. And that means living with hypocrisy.
Yeah.
That means living with these contradictions.
Yeah.
That means trying to figure out how to communicate with honesty and clarity and courage to
and
people
empathy,
these
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
But also not torching your relationships,
right,
not shooting yourself in the foot.
And maybe forgiving those around you and forgiving yourself.
Right.
Maybe those are really important things to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so you know, maybe a closing thought, which is, I think this is probably going to be our last episode for a while. If we bring this show back for season two, and we hope that we do, and we hope that our listeners help us do that by spreading the word. You know, maybe in the hiatus, think about what it is that is the edge for you as a listener. You know, how can you stay engaged and be an activist? And then let us know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked what you said, Jason, about how we may be at an inflection point or a turning point. And so seems like more people are moving into crazy town with us, so it's nice to have some company.
That's right. Welcome.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to the podcast, and while you're at it, rate or review it at iTunes. That really helps get in front of more people. To learn more, visit postcarbon.org/crazytown. And if you want to actually learn something instead of listening to us bozos, you should check out Post Carbon Institute's Think Resilience course. It's 4 hours, $20, and will seriously change the way you see the world. Catch you next time on the mean streets of Crazy Town.
Today's sponsor is a fascinating tech startup that Crazy Town listeners are going to want to follow in the coming years, assuming we have many left. You see, most survivalist strategies rely on bunkers, guns, crappy stored food, and basically holding out longer than the rest of the sheeple. And you know, cryogenics is just not an option when the grid goes down and you defrost uncontrollably in the middle of Armageddon. Now, this is where tardigrade tech comes in as the best option possibly available if they can raise enough money from investors and solve all the scientific and technical challenges. Your body basically gets dehydrated and you go into a metabolic quiescent state that lasts indefinitely. Just add water, and you should wake back up, ideally once it's all over, and the Earth is a peaceful Garden of Eden again.
Tardigrade Tech.